This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann of Utapoti, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. We haven't actually talked about Jack's trip.
Oh, Space Camp. He had the best time, and Whakatane High School / Trident High School / Logan Park High School, because my niece came up to join the crew. They won the overall Space Camp competition, beat the world.
Wow.
As Whakatane does.
Leaders of space.
Leaders of space. They just nailed all the engineering challenges. They had the time of their lives. He's glad that he went.
Awesome.
And I'm glad that he's glad, because it cost $10,000. So I would have been sad if he wasn't glad.
It would be unfortunate if a miserable time was had by all, wouldn't it? So, who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce the very wonderful Jet Swanberg. Jet, thank you for joining us today. It is so lovely to have you with us.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Where did you grow up, Jet?
So, I grew up in Tauranga, more specifically Mount Maunganui. So, I've lived there my whole life. So, it's a pretty special place in my heart. All my family's there, extended family, grandparents. So, you know, born and bred Tauranga.
You're the second person we've talked to who grew up on a beach.
Yeah. Not as good as my beach, I'm sure.
He might argue otherwise. It was Takapuna. Yes, I think I'm on your side, actually.
I definitely am. Although Ohopi Beach, you're working pretty hard to try and find anywhere better than Ohopi Beach.
Please. We're almost on the same line there, though. So
yeah, same beach. Yeah.
So what did you want to be when you grew up?
Initially, I think as most kids going through school, you either want to be like a professional sports player or a policeman. But then as I progressed through school and took on subjects like math and finance, I definitely took a liking to it, definitely more than like the English side of things. So that's when I pursued a undergraduate here at Otago doing finance, and hopefully look to start a career next year in Tauranga.
Cool. Doing what?
A finance analyst for a Holdens company there.
Cool. So you're doing a course in sustainable management, sustainable business. Why did you choose that out of the vast array of options that you had?
So I got given all the options, right? And you read through them and you see all this old finance literature and things that are black and white. And honestly, although I do have a passion for finance, this one definitely stuck out to me as being something I could enjoy a bit more, especially in my last year here. I thought, why not branch out a little bit more?
Have you sort of considered sustainability before? Was it part of your undergrad?
Yes. So last year I actually wrote a thesis paper on sustainability and greenwashing and finance. So I've always kind of linked finance and sustainability anyway. And I think, as someone of our generation and our future ahead, it's important to think about for sure. So, yeah, I've always kind of taken a liking to sustainability, and seeing this paper and I had a few friends doing it as well. I thought it'd be real cool.
And you're a bit of an entrepreneur?
Yeah, nah, I've got a business with a friend. Yeah, Solar Booth, I guess you'll hear a bit more about that in the next interview. But yeah, nah, I have always been kind of driven to do whatever venture kind of falls on my lap at the time. But yeah, I think I like to try keep busy.
Let's take, the Patea Māori Club, Poie. Why this one?
So I've always been adopted by the Māori culture, and I thought, what cooler way to get an intro song than that one?
Everybody has somebody that kind of sets them up for the future, an inspiration, a role model. Who have been your role models and what did they teach you?
For sure. So I've always had a really close support crew around me growing up. And I think the biggest standout for me would be my dad. He's been by my side the whole time, and I almost following a similar career path, not as in finance, but he was an entrepreneur himself. And I've always kind of aspired to be a little bit like him. And then as well as that, just family, friends, you know, I've got a really tight clique here in Tauranga. my auntie and uncle, close, both of them, grandparents. So I guess just my family.
And do you see yourself as being a good role model for the future?
I think so. I'd like to think so.
And what will be the thing that you, what's the thing that you'll model? What do you want to be known for?
Well, I definitely like to leave a mark on my community. Like I said at the start, I think Tauranga and Mount Maunganui are a pretty special place to me. So to leave a legacy there and something positive, I don't know what it is yet, would be the ideal goal.
If I could magic you into the future 10 years from now, so the year is 2035, and I'm very, very old by then, what are you doing?
That's a good question. I've always been pretty financially driven, so I want to be financially set by then, hopefully, with a stable job, and then as well just have the same people around me as I do now. I think keeping your friends close is super important to me, so being with the same people that I grew up with would be an ideal goal. Having all my family around me still in Mount would be awesome.
And did you say you've got a job already lined up for next year?
Yep. I've got a job lined up next year.
Congratulations. That is outstanding.
Thank
well
you.
Done. Right. So the point of today is to introduce your podcast that you made about your person. So who did you interview and why them?
So I interviewed Mitchell Eglinton from, he's the founder of Summit Touring. So they kind of host small music gigs and stuff here and around Dunedin, actually New Zealand wide now. But I think what kind of drove it is we see a lot of these big festivals like the likes of Rhythm and Vines and Hidden Valley and things going green with no reusable cups and stuff. But here in New Zealand, we actually have a massive culture for smaller gigs and bar pop-up events and things like that. So I thought, why not take a little dive into that and see how they kind of orientate their gigs around sustainability as well.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Sustainable Business Podcast. I'm Jet, and today we're looking at sustainability in a slightly different corner of the industry. We hear a lot about big festivals going green, but what about the smaller events, the gigs and bars and clubs that make up so much of our music culture here in New Zealand? First off, I just want to thank my guests for making the time to chat with me today. I really appreciate it.
No, you're good, Hans. No stress. Happy to be here supporting out the Sustainable Business Podcast.
Hey, for those of you just tuning in, who am I here with and what do you do?
My name is Mitch Eglinton. I'm the founder and chief executive officer of Summit Touring. Pretty much, we are an electronic music promotion agency. We put on gigs all around the country, Auckland, Dunedin, Wellington, Christchurch, and yeah, just spreading the aroha around music. And it's about that,
eh? And that's super cool, eh? So I thought we'd kick things off with a bit of a background before we dive into the formalities. So this is a very like niche space you work within. How did you get into the industry?
So yeah, so I guess it was about lockdown in 2020, and like as everyone kind of did, decided I need a hobby, so decided my hobby would be DJing. So yeah, I remember I went to Rock Shop, got a pair of DJ decks, and yeah, just started out mixing. Then I moved down to Dunedin for uni and started getting booked for a few gigs and stuff, and just like through that exposure to the industry, kind of see how things work, and got to the point where I was either gonna, if I want to keep going, I'd either have to start producing music or I could go down the business route. And I chose the business route, and I thought there was definitely a gap in the market down here in Dunedin for students who need, you know, good quality events, not just the, you know, speakers and lights that you see in a bar. So yeah, I kind of just made it my mission, and 2 years down the track, here we are today. It's
built off that.
Yeah.
Super cool. Super cool. And since starting Summit Touring, what does the process look like into building what it is today? What's gone well? You know, what's been tough?
Yeah, so we started off November 2023, I believe. So it's been a massive journey. Like you said, like lots of ups, lots of downs, lots of learnings. But on the whole, I've loved the experience, and it's just been a good chance for me to get out of my comfort zone. I think in terms of what's gone well, obviously the financial side of the shows have gone well. We've managed to So we've done about 17 events, and I think we've sold out 13 of them. So, I
mean, wicked.
In terms of profit maximising, that's as good as you can ask for. And then, you know, that's not without your losses along the way. You learn quickly that, yeah, not everything is gonna go to plan. And with the events industry, there's a lot of last-minute switches. You know, I've had headliners pull out last-minute, got to do last-minute venue swaps because the weather's not looking good. There's a lot of things like that where you just need to be ready to be on your feet for. But, yeah, 2 years down the track, I'm kind of used to it by now. And if something doesn't go my way, then I'm, instead of dwelling on it, I'm kind of just like, yeah, what's next, you know?
That's such a cool founding story, and it's really cool to see where you are today. So the whole kind of point of this podcast to set the stage is I want to connect this conversation to some academic research. So in 2024, a paper called Sustainability in Events, Practices and Challenges outlines how events can become more sustainable through things like waste reduction, energy efficiency, and even social initiatives. But, and this is important, the research also shows that smaller event organisers face real barriers. You know, they don't always have control, the venues, the budgets are tight, you know, and the audiences don't necessarily care if the gig is green or not. That academic perspective is really relevant today because it mirrors many of the realities that small promoters like Summit Touring deal with. And this isn't just like a research idea. A recent article on New Zealand venues shows some local venues are leading in the way of sustainability. For example, Whiskey and Wood in Wellington has switched to LED lighting, banned single-use plastics, and even partnered with Cans for Kai to recycle aluminium cans into food programs for the community. It's inspiring stuff, but the question is, can smaller promoters working out of bars and clubs make those kinds of changes? And that's what we'll dig into now. So when you put a gig on in a bar or club, how much influence do you actually have over the sustainability things like waste, drinks, or lighting?
Yeah, it's pretty minimal, to be honest. Like, those things are pretty integral to the operational side of the venue, and the venue just handles all of that. What I get control over, I can control the production, what I can bring into the venue, so that, you know, the speakers and lights and, you know, DJ equipment and stuff like that. But in terms of those actual specifics, like you said, it's pretty limited. I mean, alcohol and waste is definitely something that's just complete venue. I think in Dunedin, the liquor licensing is so strict, so they can't really afford to give me any control over that side of things. Yeah, sustainable upgrades, I mean, I could maybe ask them or push for them, but my bargaining power is pretty small. I think unless you get a big promoter like a Live Nation or an Audiology who would consistently be booking out this venue, they might have more of a say in the actual business practice of the venue. But yeah, for a small promoter like me, it's pretty minimal.
Now, that's some good insight there. And do you think your audiences actually notice or care whether your events are sustainable?
No, I don't. I think, you know, students, they decide to come out either for, you know, socialising, they want to drink, their mates are going. If my event was, I don't know, a 100% sustainable, eco-friendly run event, I don't think they would really care too much, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think the crowds in general, you know, even on the music side of things, there's a lot of times where people go and they're not actually there for the music, which is ironic because it's a music gig, but they're there for the socialising aspect. Yeah, I've never really received any feedback on sustainability or anything, right. But at the end of the day, I don't think it would affect ticket sales.
So I guess that kind of leads into this question, almost answers it in a way, but some NZ venues are starting to go green, banning single-use plastics and switching to LED lighting and even recycling through Cans for Kai. Do you see any of these ideas working at your shows or...?
Yeah, absolutely. I think LED lighting specifically is a really great idea. It's not only, you know, it's got the environmental impacts, but in terms of, you know, venue vibe and aesthetic, it's a really effective and cool looking piece of lighting that I'd love to start using more. Banning single-use plastics and recycling. I think reusable cup scheme, like, that's kind of as far as it would go. If they were standard at venues, I'd promote them, or if the venue was keen to start implementing it, then I'd love to promote that on my social medias. I do think that it is a good initiative, especially when, you know, if you serve drinks in glass, they just get smashed pretty easily, and all the plastic just kind of gets crushed on the dance floor. So yeah, finding a middle ground like that would actually be something beneficial for me.
Yeah, man, these are some great insights, because you just wouldn't know about it from an outside perspective, so it's really cool to hear.
Yeah.
So I did a bit of a background check, and I recently saw you ran a charity event with the Heavy Breathers, raising money for men's mental health. Do you see that as part of sustainability too?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I'd say that's a social sustainability of sorts. Yeah,
for sure.
But no, that was an awesome night. We teamed up with them. Obviously, they're doing an awesome thing in second year, and managed to raise a couple thousand dollars for men's mental health, which was epic. And yeah, like being at the gig, the actual vibe was just so cool because everyone was there, you know, supporting a good cause, but also there for a good night. And yeah, it definitely showed that events have the power to create a community impact. You know, it goes a lot more than profit and stuff. And yeah, I'd love to keep doing something like that, maybe make an annual thing with them.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. So if you could just think one simple thing that people as like attendees can do to be more sustainable in this space, what do you think they could do?
I mean, for students, I mean, on a very micro aspect, even like walking to gigs, you know, walking.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, Dunedin isn't very well connected with public transport, but if you're in a city like Auckland where, you know, there's trains and buses, that's a great way to get into town. I think the big thing is just to start supporting community-driven events and venues. I think now than ever, especially it's such a hard time for people in events and hospitality and those venues, which are, you know, the cornerstones of our community. They foster a lot of social places for people to congregate and meet, and you know, it's a form of escapism for a lot of people in their 9-to-5 jobs. So I think as long as people keep buying tickets to them, keep buying drinks at venues, then venues are going to have longevity. But at the moment, I do feel for anyone out there because it is quite tough in that space.
Yeah, for sure. And looking ahead, do you think sustainability will become a bigger part of event promotion in New Zealand?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it already is quite a bit. Like, a lot of festivals are becoming really conscious of their environmental footprint. So they're obviously, for them, any waste left on site, that's an additional cost to them. So there is a bit of financial incentive behind reducing their waste. But I think, you know, increasingly business partners, they want to only align with festivals that do have those sustainable practices in place. Same thing goes with sponsors. So yeah, I definitely think festivals are looking for ways where they can just cut down on waste, implement more recycling. You know, I've seen the reusable cup used quite a bit in European festivals. So yeah, I think it's definitely going to start ramping up down here in New Zealand.
Yeah, for sure. And beyond the environment, how do you see your role in shaping culture and community through events?
Yeah, well, I think that obviously it is a business. I'm doing it to make money, but I love music, and a massive part of my mission is fostering spaces for young artists to grow. I think there's so much, so many talented artists all throughout the country. So if I can give some people a platform who would otherwise be in their rooms, wouldn't get that opportunity, then yeah, that's so rewarding for me, and it's something that I really want to keep championing in the years to come. And then also just on the diversity and inclusivity front, I'm trying to make it a big part of my gigs to in terms of booking the artists to get a really wide spread of people across ethnicities and genders. And you know, as a promoter, I do have a responsibility to help bring underrepresented groups in society through. You know, when you look at a stage and you see a white male there, like every other white male, you don't really think about it. But if you're a girl and you see another female up on stage, I've had so many girls come to me and say, like, oh, that's so cool that she's DJing. And, you know, hopefully that can inspire some other girls to get into the scene. And it's kind of, it's a flow-on effect. You know, if you can put underrepresented people up on those stage, then it actually creates greater representation throughout the gig. So yeah, definitely something that I'm trying to do more.
It's so cool how you can see the balance between, you know, that financial wealth and also that social wealth. It's really inspiring.
Definitely, yeah. It's super important to have both, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And so, like, let's bring this all together. The academic research shows that small-scale event promoters face big barriers to sustainability. Limited budgets, little control over other venues, and audiences who don't engage with eco-efforts. The New Zealand Venue article shows what's possible when venues commit. Banning single-use plastics, investing in LEDs, and building partnerships like Cans for Kai. And Summit Touring gives us an on-ground reality for bar and club gigs. Those things are harder to implement, but sustainability can mean making a difference socially. Like the men's mental health fundraiser, and culturally by growing New Zealand's electronic music scene. So maybe sustainability at this scale isn't about matching Glastonbury's eco-initiatives. It's about making realistic contributions that balances business, culture, and community. Hey, Mitch, thanks so much for jumping on today and sharing your journey with us. It's been awesome.
No worries, mate. Good to chat.
Yeah, hearing about how Summit Touring not only has grown, but the challenges and opportunities when it comes to making gigs more sustainable. I really appreciate your honesty and the insights you've given. I know our listeners will too.
Cool. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, mate.
What was your big takeaway from that interview, Jet?
A big difference from contrasting to the big gigs again, like I said earlier, was that these festival organisers have a lot more control over what actually, how they contribute to their sustainability. Whereas for people like Mitchell, it is a bit different. Like, they don't have control over the venue policies and things like that, like the cup usage, or the only thing they really kind of have control over is the artist liaisons and how they get there. And even like, they don't have as much control over their attendees as big festivals would as well. I think, you know, he mentioned a lot of things like, if we could get people to start, you know, walking to these gigs rather than Ubering if it's close and stuff like that, it'd be pretty awesome. But like you said, he doesn't have a lot of control over it as a big festival organizer would.
Is that something that he has kind of got a, him, either you or him, you from the interview itself, got a vision for the possibility of change?
Yes, and that's something that took a big part of our podcast, was how he's saying, how we can see it moving in the next few years. I think his audience age is right in that kind of area where they are concerned with sustainability. So he can see a movement for change as well. But like, it does start with attendee apathy, really. Like, they just don't really get it at the moment, but he thinks over the next few years that could be a change.
There's it's really hard. I noticed, like, for the rural kids, like people who are growing up in places like Whakatane, not so much Tauranga, maybe a little bit at the Mount, where bus services don't always work around times, and so people in these smaller centres, you don't grow up thinking about taking a bus or taking a train. And so when you move into the city as an adult, or for your university, or, you know, for going to these kind of things, it's just not a viable option. How do we shift that?
Oh, I completely agree. Like, I, even coming from the Mount, like, our system was not that great either.
No.
So I think it will just take time, but I think as we progress over these next couple of years, I think it's going to be huge seeing the difference. But right now, yeah, like you're right. Like, a lot of these people from smaller regions don't even see it as a viable option at all. But
no.
Yeah, I think with time, and as they kind of almost progress into bigger cities, they'll learn.
That's interesting, because Sam takes the bus. He's a bus user. And because he's got a bus service that works. I would never think about taking a bus, because I live in Whakatane. It's just not a thing that you ever think about doing. And so I get where Mitch is coming from. There is a requirement for some kind of education to get people thinking about alternatives to jumping in an Uber or bringing their car or taking a taxi or any,
Yeah, for sure. Like, that is, because that was kind of like a diverging interest from me and Mitch, because he grew up in Auckland, where it's almost set out for you. Like, public transport there is pretty great at the moment, I think. And me coming from Tauranga, where it wasn't great, like getting to school, even like me and my whole group of friends all had scooters, and we all got cars straight after that. Like, busing just wasn't ideal for us. Then we had to go to six different stops all the way around the city before we could even go towards our house.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Ah, that's interesting. Oh, well, I'm excited about that. So if I gave you a magic wand so you can fix that problem, how would you fix it?
I think it comes with awareness for the people that came from these different regions. I think that's the first step. We just need to make people more aware. And with more people thinking in that direction, that'll come naturally, you know, with people talking to each other, like even here at university, you know, talking with people coming from bigger regions, they say, like, why don't you jump on the bus, or why don't you do this, why don't you do this? It's like, oh, I didn't even know that was a viable option here. But I think, yeah, again, just will take time, but I think we could see some change in the next couple of years.
What do you think, take? What do you think we can take from your discussion with Mitch about power relations? And what I'm thinking about is, as a small promoter, I think he said you don't have much, a limited ability to affect business practice. But I would imagine that those venues wouldn't appreciate it if you didn't turn up. So you do have some leverage.
Yeah, 100%. Like, and there's, yeah, I agree, but it's also in both their best interest. The way Mitch's business model works as well is that he only takes revenue from tickets anyway, and then they get all the drinks revenue. So it's kind of a win-win for both of them, but he doesn't actually, like, he doesn't actually have much leveraging power at all. I know he cannot show up, but that is his business as well. Like, it's in his best interest to go. But I think what we talked about a lot as well, though, on that kind of note, is social sustainability. Like, what he does have power over is who he chooses to bring into his gigs, you know, the price point, who he gets to play. I think he wants to try get a big diverse range of all different people, cultures and genders to get up on the stage and give it the best crack, especially with DJing coming more into the scene a bit more now.
Yeah, I think, yes, and he talked about the mental health charity and things.
Yeah.
When we ran TEDx Dunedin a few years ago, we made a decision to that it was going to have a positive impact. So we wanted to know that the people that were supplying our lunch, what were they doing in order to themselves have a positive impact? And so we ended up, the food was made by women from the refugee community. And similarly about the T-shirts, it's not just, we don't just want to know that it's got a green stamp, we want to know what you're doing extra. And we were doing that from a position of like zero power. And again, similar to these gigs, the people turning up, while they were a crowd that wouldn't be opposed to that, that's not why they were turning up. So I wonder how we can kind of normalize that making a positive difference as a thing that we do.
Yeah. And I think Mitch is definitely heading in that right direction as opposed to other like festival organizers and gig runners that are just kind of purely orientated around profit. I think he is definitely making a positive impact. He's asking all the right questions and thinking all the right things as well. And he's not afraid to have full transparency around it because he knows what he's doing is in everyone's best interest. Like, he is trying to strive for change.
Would it work, do you think, to actually brand stuff as green in that space, or would that just get in the way?
No, I think it needs time at the moment, but like a big part of it was like just like apathy of the attendees. Like, they didn't really care whether it was a sustainable gig or not. Although Mitch is thinking that, like, he is trying to make a change because he knows he's the one causing all of it. But like, on the consumer end, there just wasn't a lot of pushback or anything, whether it was a green gig or not.
But the more he talks about it being a green gig, the more people will notice when people don't say that it's a green gig. Yes. It's about normalising that conversation. I went to a conference last year and there was so much food, an obscene amount of food, and there was no way the food was getting eaten. And they had promoted themselves as very green in this conference, and it was a finance conference. And I said to the organiser, what happens to all the leftover food? And she just looked at me blankly, like I'd asked her why elephants have got tusks. It was just like, like, why are you asking me that? How would I even know? And I was so shocked that she didn't know. Because how could you not know what happens to all the leftover food when you're promoting yourself as a green event? So it's about being willing to ask the question, but also being willing to keep the conversation going. And he's got the power to do that.
Yeah.
Creating the new normal.
Yeah, for sure.
In your own business, as we'll discover next week, you started out with a single-use thing and then moved to a multiple-use thing, kind of because of pressure. or people asking the question, how did you shift your branding and how did you shift in terms of that conversation, normalizing the conversation that Mawira's talking about? How did that shift your thinking?
Well, initially, we came from a safety perspective. Like, we knew that it wasn't like a great product at all with the single use limitations and all, but we kind of looked past, even though we were thinking sustainability and we were trying to be green with our packaging being boxes and stuff, we just knew that like what the problem was solving was more important than the single use unit that was being disposed. But then as time went on and we kind of transferred into a less of like an emergency charger and more into an everyday use, and like when you go hiking and things that you just keep in your pockets, we realized that there definitely needed to be change. And that's when like it did come at a much bigger cost, but we feel like it's just such a necessary step. And like, if we're as the younger generation, you know, preaching these business ideas, then like, what are the people below us going to think as well?
Bubble Sprite of the wild coasts, secluded inlets, and forest and beaches of Otago Peninsula. Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu McKenzie.
I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars, and your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are, whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough. We've had to navigate so many new ways of doing, being, seeing, feeling. And of course, for us all, this means it's so important to give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the care, the compassion, the love, the understanding that we all so dearly need and can innately provide. I know for myself, of course, the living world is always a great comfort and source of inspiration. And I love the opportunity and the privilege to speak with you all as part of Blowing Bubbles. Very grateful to Sam and the whole team for having me. And of course, the show has been illuminating our consensus reality for many years now, and it's wonderful to have been part of this journey since the beginning. I'm so grateful. And at this time in my life, I'm embarking on a new adventure to help the Hoiho. And this all came to be because I had a prophetic dream about the Hoiho, and I was standing on a headland looking at these beautiful rock formations, the pyramids, at Orkia or Victory Beach out here on the Otago Peninsula. And I was looking at these pyramids, these volcanic mountainous structures from the seaside from an angle I had never viewed them from before. And I was gazing up on them and I was talking to a Swedish scientist lady about the yellow-eyed penguin's gut microbiome. And so I have been called to help them. And of course, the Swedish scientist lady will arrive at some point. And a few months after I had that dream, I met the owners of the Otago Shore and Land Trust, and I began the process of moving from my heart's home, Ōtakunui, to this new workplace, and it's been really fascinating for me. And I'm now setting up the education program for the Opera, the Monarch, which is the wildlife cruise boat, and Wingatui Glasshouses, where we're growing all the native trees to reforest the 257 hectares of penguin habitat out at the Opera. So it's a very exciting journey for me. And of course, within this whole process, I've had to really trust in the tohu that I've received, the signs and signals that I've received from the universe and from the living world. And of course, humans are a big part of that, and it's been wonderful as I have been embarking on these new directions that people have come to me and helped me and shared their wisdom and their metodica with me, including about the microbiome. And so of course this has got me thinking about many different things that I want to share with you, but in the main way that I think we live, sometimes it can be hard for us to see the connections and the impact that we have every day. And, you know, if we go more deeply into these ideas about the microbiome. We see that our own lives and our actions every day are part, of course, of a much wider web of symbiosis and monarchy, of relationship, of exchange, of interchange, and that our environment is responding to us constantly. And, you know, there's a beautiful Mataraka Māori concept of Mate Mate One, and this process by which we walk on the earth and we shed our skin and we shed our essence, and the earth responds and the earth gives us what we need. And so, you know, I'm really enjoying that process at the moment in my own life. So I really hope for you, as you're journeying through your day, you can see the ways in which your environment is responsive to you, with the other life forms around you picking up on the signals that you're giving out and coming back to you, meeting your needs, often in unexpected ways, but in ways that are always a pleasure to recognise. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
Jet, we've been talking about sustainability and business. Let's unpack that. Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
I think of it as like single-use waste for sure. First thing that comes to mind, plastic bottles, anything that, you know, could be replaced with something that could be reused, like everything like that. But then I know there's also a bigger like aspect that you don't see in your day-to-day life as a consumer, like all the factories that are polluting the air and things like that. But I just, because it's not as visible, it's not right in front of you, you don't think about it as much.
All of those decisions about these, both the single use and the bigger picture, the factories and so on, they are all being run by businesses. So I'm going to argue that business has got us into this mess. Can business get us out of it?
Well, I hope so. I think it also has to be driven by like a lot of regulation from the government and legislation. And that is also going to be coming from consumer pushback and things like that. So it all has a big kind of circle effect. And as soon as one stands up, then it pushes the next and the next and the next. So like there's all these different parties, like the governments and the consumers and the businesses. And like it kind of has to start from somewhere and it'll flow on.
I have some questions to end the show. What's the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
I think it depends how you define success, but I think even pivoting from the single use to rechargeable one, just in our business alone, is a massive success for us. I think didn't have anything to do with financially, but I think the impact it's going to have on the future if we do grow as a business, and how many units we sell, I think it'll be a massive success, knowing that we made that change so early on rather than distributing all these single-use batteries.
We're writing a book of these conversations. It's called Tomorrow's Heroes.
Oh, cool.
What's your superpower?
Ooh. Hard question. I've always, if I could have one, what would it be?
Yeah.
No, you have one. What is it?
Yeah, because if you're going to say flying or invisibility, I was going to ask for a real one. If we bottle the essence of what makes Jet special.
Okay, I'd go charisma.
Charisma.
That's a great superhero. That's a great superpower. Actually,
I think out of all the aspects, I pride myself on being charismatic.
What does that do for you? What does that do for sustainability?
To link it to sustainability, I think as a charismatic person, you attract others' attention. I think you lead by example almost. People see what you do and they kind of look to follow just because of how well you're carrying yourself. I feel like a charismatic person carries himself well, and if other people see that, then they want to follow. So if I can be sustainable and other people see that, then hopefully I can have an effect on them as well.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
I'm going to assume an activist means someone that can make change. And I think I am. But I don't want to... Yeah, okay, that's good. I didn't want to say I am before I knew if it was the correct answer or not.
It's not a correct thing. It's your opportunity for to tell us what you think.
Yeah, but I didn't know if an activist was something bad, and then I just put myself in the boiling water there.
If you're from most of the world, then most people are quite proud to call themselves an activist. Americans avoid the word activist like the plague.
Oh, right. Right.
So we've been asking that question a lot. So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Ever since I was young, I've always been super driven. What motivates me exactly, I don't know. I think it's something intrinsic that I haven't figured out, but I'm always wanting to do more. I love working hard. I guess I just like the hustle of everything.
Maybe that's what we need. I mean, we've been talking so long about sustainability being this thing that people have been putting off until 2050 or however long they can put it off so they don't have to think about it. Maybe we need that hustle.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
A hustle in a good way, not a hustle as in a con.
No, yeah, exactly. Good to differentiate those two.
So what challenge are you looking forward to in the next year or so?
I think balancing, obviously, my new job, and then I've also got a couple separate ventures that I want to pursue, obviously, with Solo Boost as well. I think balancing all that will be a massive challenge, but I'm excited for it. I mean, I've had 4 years of university now. I'm ready to, you know, get out of here and actually put some pen on paper and try make something of it.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I think for people my age, it's important to understand that we're only here for a limited amount of time, that you should take every opportunity that comes to you. I think too many times we shy away from things that we shouldn't, things that we want, just because it's, I don't know, maybe not be socially normal at the time, but I think just take on all the opportunities you get.
I shall take the opportunity to ask Mawira to close for us.
Jet, it has been a joy to share a classroom space with you. And you've got this little group of guys, and you're all just actually pretty special in the best kind of way. You're funny and easy to engage with, and your work is amazing, and you're all on a really good path in your lives. I have more confidence in the future than I have had in a long time just from having spent time with you over these last couple of months. All the best for the future. May you find joy, and may your leadership skills be put into good use through the course of your life. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jet. We're going to go out to your second music choice, which is Peter Bjorn's Young Folks.
Exactly.
been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. We are brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, who are brought to you by both Otago Polytechnic and the University of Otago. We were joined today by Jet Swanberg, who was talking to Mitch Eglinton for his contribution of Coming Up for Air. With Mawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mā te wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.